Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, November the 10th, 2009, and this is our 109 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Hello, Michael.
Hello, and welcome back to everyone. Never knew that we would get this far in recordings and have a growing following. Seems to be growing all continuously, so that's good, because not my project. I'm just basically just trying to extend to the you, the audience, as much as possible, a honest and sincere story that opens the way up for greater expansion of reality.
It sure is an expansion of reality.
Yeah.
But Saturn's a beautiful planet, and so is Earth. And they're right here in our solar system. But I can, let me start with broadcasturantia.com. That's Jay. He writes and he says, "Hi, Curtis. I got a question for Michael. According to the Urantia book, the material sons and daughters reside on Jerusalem. From what I understand, they are approximately 8 feet in height and have a certain glow about them. Now, I know that Michael has mentioned the Dorians being similar in height and human-looking as well. My question is, could the Dorians be from the same order of the material suns? And if not, did Michael get a chance to see any material sons and daughters? Thanks, Jay."
Okay, Jay. Jay is from Broadcast Urantia. He's got that nice blog, and it's a good meeting place for anyone who wants to be a part of the awakening of the reality of our being in this universe that is going to be expanded and clarified. Well, when we look at Jerusalem, one of the interesting things was how they named the sphere, the city there that's orbiting Saturn, which I went to. It's quite gigantic, and has a name which is called the New Jerusalem. And I immediately said, "We've got a Jerusalem on Earth." And they said to me that that is also pointing at this Jerusalem. The Jerusalem are this capital area of Satania. As soon as it mentioned Satania, I flipped out. I thought I was in the wrong place, you know. Mm-hmm. And was immediately given a little bit more clarification. And enough in which I realized that this couldn't be an evil place anyway. And there was much more that would be allowed to learn. Ultimately, it's wonderful that the Urantia book does point out some interesting facts. And yes, Jay, there are people there who looked human-like, very human-looking. And there were, indeed, the Dorians, who are just individuals, but they are so much alike. It's like looking at twins, identical twins. It's very hard to tell them apart. But their personalities were very different. And this is the way I could tell one from another, so one being some being more outgoing or willing to share or correct even me in my attitude, which was, "Why are they all girls?" And this is, "We're not girls." And anyway, continuing through that conversation, I realized that they were indeed very real people. And there was an example of perhaps one of the citizens. They were tall, but not necessarily 8 feet tall. The ones who were 8 feet tall were of dark complexion, and I'm sure there were others who were probably of lighter complexion. But the ones that I met were quite tall, 8 feet to 9 feet tall, fully I would say human proportion. They weren't like stretched out, or lanky, or suffering from what would be, what could seem to be, you know, the typical look of our own on our planet, humans that are suffering from giganticism or something like that, in which they just, you know, have a genetic disorder, growing too much and have too much growth hormone, and did not look at all like that. They just looked like regular people. They did distinctly give me the impression that they might have ceded some of their genes to some of the Polynesian types here, because they definitely gave me the feel that they were like Polynesian. Those that have an aura that was visible to me were not all these gigantic types. It could be in the different places, different areas would allow for an aura, but where I was seeing them, they didn't produce. The only ones that produced a beautiful and fabulous aura was the elders, and they were short with sort of heart-shaped heads, bald, that had very wrinkled skin and had a cleave down the middle of their head. In other words, there was two major lobes, one on each side. And they definitely came up with a blue aura that seemed more like smoke or something like that, that seemed to emanate from them. So as far as that goes, that's the answer that I have. Is there another part, Curtis, to that question?
No. Well, he asked if the Dorians could be the same order of the material suns.
Well, all material suns, interestingly enough, are not identical. And we're a group of material suns, but we are of the mortal order. In other words, Our ability to move on and transcend time and move through life in physical bodies is limited because of the natural genetic design that we are composed of. However, one of the most important things is we are almost like seed. We're like seed that have the potential to grow into a great tree or plant. One of the most important things and fundamental things that we have to understand is, because of my relationship and having understood them, the transition between a mortal soul and the cover back again, the soul, to transition and move into another material body, morontial body, is very important. Much better to do that than to remain a detached or a disassociated soul. And it's almost like being a lost soul. But in order that we make that transition from mortal physical being, whether it be through death or through a translation, into a physical or material body of the morantia quality, it requires a certain introduction or a will of an external. In other words, there is a type of judgment a type of choice or selection that is made. It is not an automatic process. It is a process of selection. And it's one thing that was made clear in terms of selection. 10 said that, remember, this is not about power or control, and I selected you. You did not select me. This is an important factor. The choice is there, not by us. Our willingness to be is important. A willingness to translate or to be citizens of heaven is important. And our lives will prove it out as recorded and as lived. So this is an important factor in terms of whether it's autonomically implanted, the resurrection, the so-called resurrection. And your Yurancha book also calls it a resurrection. This movement into a physical, back into a material form, material body. But that being transdimensional to an extent, having Moranshal characteristics, which are, we would say, are supernatural. But it becomes more akin to being part of and associated with the Moranshal form that we would take. Essentially, our physical bodies cannot bear that position, that reality, that composition. We wouldn't be able to be supposedly like recharged. Go under. So it made clear to me that my body would die, would perish, but I wouldn't die. But my body would, if I were to be implanted or be subject to the use of the regeneration or the resurrection chamber. So, yes, I have made my own surmising, perhaps, when I noticed like the Dorians seemed to be so identical that they could have a first-level Moranshal form. Although they maintain their characteristic of who they are in personality, their physical appearance is not the important point. They do have a material body. They are without sex ability. They're neither male or female. And they also made it clear that they did not have the ability to procreate. So they, therefore, their physical or their material being was of construction of one form or another, or manufacture of one form or another. I'm not sure, but it was clear that they did not have the normal mortal ability of life, of creating progress of life, life being able to regenerate itself. So anyway, that's what I can share.
And he
as
was
honestly I can.
He was also asking, did you get a chance to see any material sons or daughters?
That's what I'm describing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
So are you saying the Dorians are?
Yes. What? They're material sons.
So they're actually material sons and daughters, since they are both male and female.
They did not claim sonship or daughtership or male or female gender.
Mm-hmm.
But not to say that others would not claim it. I believe there are many who would claim a male or female gender type. It disappears as progress is made, but as they are close to the mortal life experience, many times individuals who have transcended the mortal realm and become rancho beings tend to, some of them tend to want to keep the male-female gender type for a while.
Now, you said you've seen a lot of Dorians up there, and they were all in a row. How many would you say you saw at one time?
Probably a neighborhood of 30 or so.
30. Like all butterflies or something. They all look alike.
It was amazing. They were probably on riding on some kind of a levitator, but that was like more like tracked, you know, having, they're all like in single file, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we have a question from Courtney from Santa Cruz, California. He writes, as I listened to Michael tell his story, I recalled my story, a dream vision of at least two huge luminous spheres too close to our Earth to be safe. Meaning to me, I believe at the time that the tidal forces of worlds of such great density worlds would tear our planet Earth apart. But this was not the case. Our Earth and these enormous spheres rested close to us and were peacefully near to us. Now, I know that the celestial beings call themselves architectural worlds, like New Jerusalem. And she ends by saying, thank you, Courtney. So I don't really see a question there. I'm sorry, Michael, but she's just talking about one of her dreams.
What I can comment on is that this immense quality of mass and density and gravity is a factor that is overcome by what it is. It's quite active. It's not a vehicle. It's not a body, like a mass, only working with its physical size. It is really a ship, and it has with it much more than you might just give to another body. In other words, it can interact with other bodies and have some effect or have very little effect. Ultimately, it's how they want to pilot themselves around. Basically, that's the term, I guess you might say. They want to pilot themselves close to, you know, any other celestial body. I know I sent you, Curtis, a picture of the New Jerusalem having gone through the rings of Saturn and leaving a wake in the ring of Saturn.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
Yeah. And did you ever post it?
No, I never did.
Well, it's a very interesting picture, and it'd be kind of nice to post that because it tells, it exposes a little bit of the reality of the New Jerusalem's ability to basically maneuver. Because if it was a repetitive interference by a body, it would have ultimately destroyed the ring, in other words, Saturn. So, just moving through the rings and leaving a wake gives an indication that this doesn't happen all the time. Because if it did, we would not be seeing Saturn the way we see it now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because the rings would be?
The rings would have been intercepted by that continual body's orbit and continually interfering and destroying, literally destroying the ring structure. I mean, over thousands upon thousands upon thousands of millions of years, you know, but we see as an intact ring structure.
Yeah, it really showed it sort of had like a trail,
like a boat wake. Like a boat's wake.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, it's a phenomenal picture when you think about it from the perspective in which I just explained.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll get it on there. I don't know about tonight, but I'll try. Put it on the top of your photographs. And we have a letter from a new listener, and I just thought I'd read it to you because it's just so nice. Hello, Curtis and Michael. I love visiting your site. It is truly a calm harbor, which I thought was pretty cool to call it that. It's not flashy at all. It just basically plain. And she goes on, she says, I ordered the ozonator. My family and I are really enjoying the health benefits of it. My daughter started coming down with the flu yesterday, and after drinking the water, her symptoms didn't get any worse, and today her health is starting to return. Thanks for recommending it. I finished listening to all of your podcasts. I must thank you both from the bottom of my heart for doing these shows. I have enjoyed them all, but I wanted to mention the ones that had a particular influence on me. First of all, Hour 22, in which the elder sent a message, had a profound effect on me. I carried its vibration in my heart for days afterward. It was an amazing gift that you provided me that day, and thank you for it. Also, your explanations of Lucifer and his cohorts efforts to interfere with human interaction with their thought adjusters really brought home to me the enormity of the iniquitous, I'm sorry. I now have a greater depth of love for my thought adjuster after contemplating this idea of separation. I thank you for this also. Finally, your series on navigating the psychic circles is a great help to me. The Urantia book is a little lacking in this area, and you have provided me with a great tool for navigating inward. Thank you. And she ends by saying, in closing, I'd like to say that I'm feeling quite joyful today. I think that we are extremely blessed to be living in such a magnificent time period. I feel like one of your horses under that paper dragon, and I've just stuck my nose out. I can feel the warm sunshine on my nose, and there is a slight hint of sweet grass in the air. Love and joy to you, Kathleen. Well, thank you very much, Kathleen. Isn't that a nice letter, Michael?
It's a nice and a sweet letter, and letter of true liberty. One of the important things is that we are truly at liberty. We have a kind of a liberty to choose to navigate inward and to be a part of, or to gain a close relationship to God via the thought adjuster, the very most precious of all divine substance that we have, a prepersonal, actual fragment of God or a fractal of God. In other words, the exact image. A fractal would be perfect example of the original, and it has that characteristic. But we need to choose to navigate inward to that, and that was made clear to me. I didn't realize that this was something that was available until I ended up learning it from in a conscious way from the Dano teacher, the high order teacher. He is probably still active teaching, and he uses his students to teach. This is one of the most important factors that I observed. I am one of his students. And in his class, I learned a lot from the students. If they had the answer to a question, they would answer it, and he would simply observe it, the answer, and it was a method in which he used to teach. So learning what you learn through my words is a method in which he's using right now. He will interrupt if I do get off tangent. I sort of would go into a pause. But it is important that our thought adjuster is really our most wonderful and most precious of all gifts, actual piece of the divine in us. It's sort of like we have in our physical bodies a little bit of our father, a little bit of our mother in ourselves, in the genetic makeup that we have. In a similar sense, in a transdimensional sense, in a spiritual sense, that is also true with God's fragment in us. And we can freely express our lives through our own free and truly God-given life to express it, express our relationship. And it's always a little different for every one of us, but it's very precious for us who are ascending sons of the, of you might say, ascending beings of a mortal order and material ascending order. And the ascending order is one in which has the highest destiny, believe it or not. It was made clear that a created son, perhaps like I explained earlier, was a Dorian. Let's say they all looked alike, you know, seemed, but they had different personalities. They ended up in the classroom with me, sharing some things that they knew, but also for the fact that since they were in the same classroom with me, these who had experienced much more than I have in terms of civilization, in terms of maybe even the Jerusalem or the capital, being a citizen of a material son, still needed education in terms of what goes on in the universe. And that was an interesting factor. I walked away from that experience, always being reminded I was in a class of celestial beings who at that same time were also being educated at the very same level in which I was. And they were learning as much from me as I was from them. And all under the guidance and the astute guidance of the Dano High Order Teacher, who never commanded the class as an instructor, but rather as one who would translate just in time all the information that each student was ready to absorb in that one instant of time. So there's wonderful use of time, also wonderful use of divine abilities and divine nature. So I'm glad that you're able to absorb some of this truth, because it can get a little detached sometimes or hard to comprehend. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's my comment.
Well, that's beautiful. It is nice that people aren't catching up. We constantly see on the daily totals that, all those hours, those back hours, there, people are catching up. Or David from Springs, Texas, he said he got up to hour like 9, I think, and then he jumped ahead and went back and forth. There are a lot of hours talking about this subject. Thank you, Michael. Well, here's a letter from David in Springs, Texas. He writes, "Hello, Michael and Curtis. I have two questions to ask. Number one, we need to survive in this world society with earning an income. How can we have a job with less time away from home and family and be able to get by only with the necessities so we can study and learn more to be godlike?" That's a tough question, isn't it, Michael?
No, it's a question that is always asked.
It's always asked.
Yeah, it's one of the fair things about being in this position of time, space, you know, our locked-in environment, four-dimensional space that we live in. The time allocation for each one of us is used up according to our ability to understand and to take it for its purpose. It's equally divided and then not equally used. And this is one of the important factors that I learned in terms of just simple usage of time. And it was an amazing discovery when I realized or found out that because time is equally divided, but not so equally used, I would want to be in the one category that tends to be able to use time more efficiently or effectively. Now, one of the things that we do have in development and of ourselves, who we are via the thought adjuster is that relationship between our thought adjuster and our selves, our personal selves, who we are. And that makes the fairness of our maturity in our relationship with the adjuster pretty much equal. It's just how often do we take the time out or just simply lay upon our hearts that realization that we are not alone, that we have indeed a divine friend. Biblically, it's been written, a friend that sticks closer than a brother. This is the name in which was given, or the relationships were given to the lordship, you might say, of the adjuster in our lives, and the usage of what we have in our lives. If we make the mistake of placing our physical needs, our desire to develop the abilities to provide for our physical need above and beyond that of our relationship to our divine instructor, our divine guide, our very God friend within ourselves, we really actually short-circuit the ability the thought adjuster has in framing time toward our advantage. Now, when I say framing time toward our advantage, there's a lot of time that goes on is not used effectively. I know that some people have used time effectively in terms of driving around and saying, okay, let's see, behind so many hours on the Michael Connection recordings, also burn the recording and then play it on the MP3 players as they're driving down the road. But this is a more effective use of time. It's equally divided, but somehow we are able to manage time with technologies that are available to us now that weren't at one time. Now, this is just a simple, not so super spiritual example. But the more spiritual example comes in the relationship as we turn closer to the divine fractal. We will find out that the times in which our mind is laid asleep, it is never really at rest. And if we have adjusted ourselves to the voice of our adjuster, even our dreams become a vehicle for a relationship. So this time of sleep and dream becomes even more powerful tool in aligning us ever closer to all the truths that are in there and the real holographic rule of heart, the rule of the adjuster in our hearts to be a true citizen of the heavens without the need for written laws and rules and regulations composed by men of imperfect knowledge. And this is where we continually grow into. And this is the very factor that is seen in us in terms of a maturity, as an ability to, wow, they have come to a point where they have adjusted their hearts to be in tune with the resonance of the rule of the universe, Michael of Nevadon, the ruler of the universe, the very image that is placed within every individual in the heart. That's why no one is able to move past and go to directly to the Father without having passed through the kind guidance of his rule in our hearts. Whether we know him as Jesus Christ, Michael of Nevadon, the Son, the Creator of the universe, or any of the numerous other names that are given to this divine being within ourselves and our relationship to him, which is whole and active, that is the essence of our real, true citizenship rule, heart and mind. Mm-hmm.
He has another part of his question, mentions Alex Collier. He says, other messengers who talk about the change that is coming, are they with God? I listened to Alex Collier. He does mention many things that you and Tan and Nella said, but I've never heard him mention Michael of Nevadon, Jesus, or the Urantia book. I also noticed that Alex promotes you have the power and you can do it yourself. The disciples of Christ noticed at one time that the followers of John and others were seeing them removing demons, healing the sick, and other things. They said to Christ, how are they doing that when they are not with us? And Christ said, let them alone. They who are not against us, they are for us. Could this be a similar situation with Alex and Manjurinson? Thank you, and God bless you, David.
Okay, I just touched upon some of those factors.
I know, you did.
Yeah, one of the important things is that there may not necessarily be reference to Jesus Christ, Michael of Lebanon, the Creator Son, the Creator of the Universe, any of those terms that we can use, God, you know, even Buddha. Now, Buddha, in terms of Buddhism, is not a personality, a person. It points to a level of attainment or enlightenment. There was an individual, and he's got a name that reached that point. It had a lot to do with the formation of this realization. Now, that's Buddhism. Now, whatever the form it takes, the ultimate truth is divine citizenship. The ultimate perfection is maturity in this citizenship. And that's our inheritance. So where being a being of divine citizenship or not, it all has its place within the holographic complex of divine rulership in our hearts. Now, if an individual did not necessarily have a political or a relational relationship, maybe that you could say had affinity to a philosophic title or religious affinity, or just a personality that you just follow. That is a unifying or a dividing point, has a lot to do with the hookup between true divine citizenship and one which is imperfect. And ones that are truly divine have this character in which Christ was portraying himself and saying, you don't need to go and stop them from casting out demons. For this they do, because they're also, you know, citizens of the divine and eternal heaven. This is a component and a reality, and it can be seen and shared. And we can see the activity externally many times. And for these, back in the first century, walking with Christ, they saw, they were immature. They saw a political allegiance that was necessary in order to do that, not realizing that it was not a political allegiance or a philosophic or a religious understanding or a alliance, but a divine citizenship held within the individual that allowed that. And this is what I was always, you know, akin to. In my time in ministry as a minister, I felt so encumbered because of the necessity to follow the ordinances of the church or the particular denomination that I was under, I was functioning under. But I remained there primarily under the guidance of God, the thought adjuster within myself, and his active relationship with me through and empowered by the various spiritual energies, including the Holy Spirit, that allowed for the fulfillment of my understanding of what's good and bad about all religions. There is both good as well as some bad in there. And most of the bad is just our inability to understand. And I'm trying to explain some of that reason, you know, that rationale, where the necessity of people saying, oh, they're not politically aligned with us, shall we go over there and stop them, Jesus? Jesus says, oh, no, don't. They're already citizens. They're already functioning. That's the important part. And but they don't know you. You know, they might have said, I'm just adding some of my own words there. But basically what a attorney probably had said to them, yes, they do. Because he was almost going to probably say right after that, I don't know if you really do know me. And that is an important factor also. That's why we can spend all of our day, you know, we can work for our physical needs and find great satisfaction at that, as well as attaining a gloriously personal relationship with our divine guide, divine peace of God in us. We are the Lord within ourselves, the Holy One inside of us that is ever knocking at our heart's door, saying, are you home? You know, and it's always good to remember that we don't shut we never really shut the adjuster out of our lives. It's more out of our consciousness. But it is that fulfillment of our divine citizenship that our adjuster is always akin to allowing us to truly be a citizen of the, you might say, the kingdom of heaven. I'm talking in terms of 2,000 years ago, or divine citizenship, or exopolitical acceptable allegiance, you know. Anyway, that's the story I try to explain anyway.
Michael, where is the kingdom of heaven?
Presently, we've got to understand that the Urantia book explains something to us, and it gives us a dimension that it causes, it wants us to expand beyond. But the kingdom of heaven is our known universe. If we take our time and we study the universe, and we look around and see the stars, and we know they're just, you know, not only stars, and we look, take a closer look, it's another galaxy or some other celestial organization of energies and physical matter, and then we realize that there's a lot more that goes on in that area, that all of that which we observe is essentially heaven in its partially observed sense. There's a lot more that's there that we cannot really see, and we're beginning to learn a lot more about it. And thankfully, it is causing us to become more understanding that we truly can't be alone. There's got to be more. It's such a massive place. And that's heaven. But there's even a greater or a super imposed heaven that we simply are part of. So you might say, oh, if you think people were, think small and say, well, you know, if our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, is that the kingdom of heaven in terms of what the Urantia book points out. The Urantia book points out that it exceeds the dimensions of our galaxy, the Milky Way, and extends itself into many other galaxies. However, it also goes far beyond that, because there is that's an important point of who we are, to become true inhabiting citizens of this ever-expanding universe with infinite dimension.
Infinite
dimension, yes.
Well, Paul from Quebec writes, hi, Michael. I would like to hear your thoughts on this. Just yesterday, I heard an interview. Just yesterday, I heard an interesting idea from an American Indian teacher called Red Elk. He said during an interview that the Christian idea of letting Jesus in your heart was in fact obtaining the ability to be a free thinker.
Well, repeat that. Ability to be a what?
A free thinker.
Free thinker.
Yes.
Okay.
Letting Jesus into your heart was in fact obtaining the ability to be a free thinker. I found this idea interesting, and then just this morning, the idea came to me that he was probably talking about what you would call the spirit of truth. When we can see through the illusion of manipulation and see the very real evil that is behind so much of what goes on, and see the good stuff too, of course, then we can say we are free thinkers. We are no longer among the brainwashed masses that don't see further than their next vacation, the new car, the new kitchen, and who believe everything they see on TV. I consistently ask that God be present in my everyday life, but I am never able to say that I really feel that presence. However, if God or Christ came in the form of the Spirit of Truth, then I can say that I do feel that presence, because it is there all the time. My mind is constantly looking at what is behind all that I see, hear, and experience. This has a profound effect on everything I do and say, and on the choices I make. When asking to feel the presence of God, I've been waiting to feel something really special inside me, but it's been there for a while already. It's just me as I am now, with what I believe to be a relatively accurate view of the world. Do you think that this is indeed the spirit of truth at work? Thanks, Paul.
Well, thank you, Paul, for both comment and question. Yes, of course, the spirit of truth brings to us these knowledges. No one can even begin to speak about God without having intercepted and being at least a little bit influenced by both the Spirit of Truth and the Holy Spirit. Both of these are very real. Both of them are indeed a functional part of our lives and a very, very important part of our lives. When you think about our relationship to time, I didn't cover in terms of, you know, that the limit that we have in time, but I'd like to explain something that you did touch upon, which was the negative side. One of the things that people try to do to implant time and to overcome time's limitation is to implant their will into masses of people. We call that slavery. You understand what I'm saying, Curtis?
Yes.
You know, I think I'll multiply my will. I want to see, you know, a great huge pyramid over there. Okay, well, I think I'll enslave or find a way in which to employ my will. And what do they show? Today you can go to Cairo, Egypt, and look at the Pyramid of Giza. You know, that is an example of an expansion of one's will. And the ability for him to successfully make a some kind of a, you know, whether it be a carving of those carvings up river anyway, forgot the name of that king, but who carved them? You know, they implanted their will. And when you say free will. Wow, that's the ability to choose whether you want to be a multiplied effort or asset to someone else's will, Well, then comes down to the determination, is that truly from a divine source or from a vain source of a demigod, a human being who places himself in a demigod position. Today, yesterday, I received a vision in which I see a mode of transition. It was important for me to understand that it is not solidified, but there are demons, you might say, who want to impose their will upon our time limitation. In other words, multiply themselves by implanting whatever necessary as a tool to enact their will and thus multiply their abilities and their time. We see this during the transitional breakup of this financial institution that we have, the financial greatness of the United States as it was once seated to be dethroned soon. And I initially would have been sitting out feeling very uncomfortable if it wasn't for the fact that I received enough knowledge to know that this is part of an important factor in transition. We are not only awakening to the fact that we don't need to be enslaved by tools of willed material creatures or systems of manipulation and, you know, the order of imperfect design that was first implanted in terms of the money system for creating a civilization. We can choose and are being directed toward the holographic, the one that is based on love, is based on to do things right, more importantly than to do things simply because there are powers to be that are greater than you that force you to try to do things that you know are wrong. I watched a movie recently. It was called Schindler's List. Mm-hmm. And it was a story about a industrialist during World War II who was on the Nazi side. He was a Nazi himself. And an industrialist who became a truly divine individual. He began to listen to the thought adjuster within himself. Initially driven by profit, initially driven by the tools of manipulation and control by whatever forces they are that try to enslave humanity or enslave him. He took and turned that very instrument that was used against him, and he created a list of Jews that were headed toward Auschwitz for ultimate termination, to be killed and murdered in the gas chamber. And he was able to actually purchase their physical lives as workers and take them to another country and saved several thousand Jews from these Auschwitz chambers. And today he's declared a righteous man, or a man who followed the leading of the divinity within himself. And it is a wonderful, wonderful, real story of overcoming the tools of manipulation of the higher-ups or the demons that try to rule this world. We are going through transition now. And as in times such as that, we can turn from the tools of manipulation, whether it be financial expansion and greed and might or whatever it may be, toward doing taking that very tool and turning it around. And he had taken all of this tremendous earnings that he had created, monies and wealth, and literally bought the lives of thousands of men and women that were working in his factory. And they were saved from the horrors of the gas chambers of Auschwitz. So, it's a movie that Steven Spielberg was famous for, but it's a great reminder of the very factor of the spirit of truth. The power of the thought adjuster, once you lean and hear the voice and are guided by it. Curtis, you ever heard of that movie?
Yes, beautiful. Yes, I've seen that. It's beautiful and something to see once in a while.
Yeah, once in a while. But in the time such as we live right now, when we see the crumbling dollar, and we are looking at our nation actually facing nearly the same problems that were apparent in Germany prior to Nazism or the rise of Hitler. It's a good movie to remind us of what voice we need to listen to, even if we are entangled within the wrong side. Maybe we ultimately can do the right thing.
Well, there goes another hour, and I want to thank Jay and Courtney and Kathleen and David and Paul for sending in your comments and questions for Michael. And the water ozonator will clean the inside of your body. You can go to Soda Instruments and order one for yourself and tell them Hello Earth sent you, and they'll give you 10% off your first purchase. Our number is CA50145. And it's nice to hear people say they received one. And usually, probably the biggest first comment is the next morning their mouth feels so much different. They said, well, you just need to experience it for yourself. But they're very, very unique, aren't they? They're just a marvelous little instrument. Well, Michael,
yeah.
We'll talk with you next week, and sorry we have to cut it off, but trying to keep it close to an hour. So, time to say aloha.
Aloha.
Okay, aloha, Michael. Next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.